Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
We've escaped from Melbourne Park and we are at Catherine's Hotel. Beer in hand. Two beers law on his first. Grad Matt, how many do you typically drink?
Yeah, two's good.
Yeah, two's good. Catherine's on the first of her two wines, Whittaker.
And I know it looks enormous, but it is ice cube heavy.
Okay, all right. Okay, well, believe you. We've had a full day of tennis, folks, and we're going to get smack into it here on the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph. I'm trying to think where best to start, really, because so much has happened. I've just done the Angelique Kerber match against Kimberly Burrell.
That's which, not the place to start.
Well, I can tell you it's the place to start to say it was one of the worst matches I've ever seen in terms of its competitive nature. It was 6-1, 6-love to Angelique Kerber. Ends. Right, let's talk about something else. Rafael Nadal, we'll go backwards. We'll go backwards. That's what's happening here, folks, because I had about 4 hours sleep last night. I don't really know what day it is. Let's go backwards. And Rafael Nadal, next up, he played against Alex de Minaur, and for three games, it was brilliant.
Yeah. Competitive, back and forth, changes of momentum. Oh.
Yeah.
And then
it's over.
Yeah.
23 minutes for the first three games. And actually, de Minaur had a break point, which he didn't take. And actually, I think there was a Hawkeye overall in Nadal's favour that kept that game alive. And then thereafter, very interesting watching with Leon Smith, because we were a little concerned from Nadal's perspective in that he was rallying with de Minaur. He was playing sort of clay courty type rallies, looping, and the speed of de Minaur is just absurd, really. And we were kind of thinking, well, how are you going to win points? Because you can't get the ball past this guy. Suddenly, after three games, it was like Nadal made a conscious decision. I ain't playing anymore. I am going to just destroy you. And he just started to tee off with every single shot he had at his disposal. He went full power and just obliterated de Minaur.
It was a little bit boy against man, really, wasn't it? If you line them up and you just think, how is de Minaur supposed to live with this physical beast that is Nadal?
And I think that's exactly the review that Nadal wanted of that match. I spoke to Carlos Moya yesterday and I asked the question, does Rafa particularly relish these matches against the young guys? You know, the opportunity to say, hang on a second, it's not your time yet, it's still my time. Expecting a sort of a prevaricating type, perfectly nice but saying nothing in particular response of like, yeah, you know, he relishes all the matches. And Carlos Moya basically went, yeah, he really does. So I think man against boy is exactly the review that Rafa was wanting today. And I mean, we haven't learnt anything more about de Minaur tonight. He's still a great player. He's still lightning quick. He's still going to be top 10, probably.
I would think, yeah.
I think he'll probably be top 10.
I
think we've just learned that there are limitations. You know, it's not an unlimited ceiling. He doesn't have the weapons. You know, Rafael Nadal can run around at the back of the court, rally away, and then can suddenly decide, oh, I'm done with this rally, boom, forehand. De Minaur can't do that.
What I would say is that I do feel that when, say, Nadal retires, I'm not sure that there's that many other people that could do to Dimonor what Nadal did today. Maybe Zverev could on a good day with his big game, but I'm not convinced. I think Dimonor could live with most people.
Well, the thing is, you know, we're still in the era of Federer, Nadal and Djokovic. When they are eventually gone, the standard required to win things is not going to be quite as high as it is at the moment, because we're talking about probably the three all-time greatest players. So for Dimonor to, you know, push Nadal at times tonight and find himself, you know, just not as good a player as Nadal, not quite physically able to live with him, you know, I don't think it's not a big crisis for Dimonor.
You know what struck me tonight, sorry Catherine, was that it's 10 years since Nadal won the title here.
Mm.
10 years,
and he hasn't won one since.
No,
I hadn't quite sat down and grappled with the fact that he's only won the title here once.
Yeah, I know. I actually said he'd won it twice because I just assumed he had.
It's funny, isn't it? Because you kind of assume with Nadal that he might. He's got a better record at the US Open, where you kind of think he'll be knackered by then.
The narratives that we impose upon Nadal, maybe actually the stats and the facts don't bear them out. But I mean, I know it's easy and potentially lazy to make the parallels between Dimonor and Hewitt, but everything that you're describing there, timing is everything. I keep saying it. I hope it's not insulting to Leighton Hewitt to say that that guy was in the right place at the right time and made the most of it. That's life.
Yeah.
Life is getting a slice of luck and running with it. And boy, did he do that literally and figuratively. And, you know, as soon as Federer and Nadal came along, Hewitt suddenly faded, not into insignificance, but paled.
Plus.
But he snuck in that window and imposed himself on the window, and
Leighton sounded the death knell for serve and volley tennis. Nobody served and volleyed after Leighton Hewitt came along,
because he had that deathly head to head against Tim Henman, didn't he? Tim Henman felt he had to change his game.
And Pete Sampras. I mean, look what he did to Pete Sampras in the US Open final. He could just take serve and volleyers to the cleaners.
And even at Queens, he beat him in the final there, didn't he, on grass.
I was just about to say, we're talking about, you know, days when Matt was sort of fetal.
And yet
he remembers those as well.
So I just wanted to say on Dimonor, it felt to me a bit like Nadal Ferrer kind of today, you know. And Ferrer's one of these guys who was completely, in terms of being able to win majors, at the wrong time. But obviously Dimonor has got so much of his career ahead of him, you feel like he will actually be at the right time.
The thing that also strikes me as well from the 10 years since Nadal's title is that Fernando Verdasco is the one remaining match still going on at the moment, and he's 2-1 up as we speak to you against Marin Cilic, about to go into a tie break. And remember that semi-final, Verdasco against Nadal. If you ever get a chance to just replay that sometime, just put a couple of hours aside and whiz through that. Oh, what a match that was.
Do you know what I was doing while I was watching that match?
Go on.
I was writing my letter to Jolyon Armstrong, media director of the then
Stella Artois Championships,
to ask if there were any openings in the press setup. I was sat in front of that very match.
Goodness. And Nadal's old rival Roger Federer was victorious today in straight sets against Taylor Fritz. There was one competitive set in the middle.
Was there?
Yeah, so 7-5. 7-5.
It felt like Federer was just sort of buying his time to strike at the end of the set so he could kind of just get ahead in the third.
Channel 9 had Jim Courier, Todd Woodbridge and Nick Kyrgios commentating that match.
Did Nick come up with any pearls?
It was exactly the same as a Nick Kyrgios press conference, really. You sort of couldn't help but like him. It was really unpolished, and, you know, he wasn't really playing by the rules of commentary. He was doing it his own way, and Jim Courier had to work quite hard, but you sort of got to the end of it and thought, oh, yeah, I'm really irritated by the fact that I still like the bloke. but I mean, Jim Courier, I mean, he at one point, I think it was after Federer drop-shotted a Taylor Fritz return, he said, oh, that's just filthy. And I that for me is the summation of that match. It was just
what
he did to Taylor Fritz was sort of filthy.
Got a feeling though that Federer is not going to be doing that with Stefanos Tsitsipas in the next round, who beat Nicolas Basilashvili in one of the early matches of the day. I was in early today, and it was four sets. Bit tasty, I have to say. The third set was 9-7 in the tiebreak, and Tsitsipas got a time violation and lost a serve, lost his first serve when he was serving for the third set, ended up losing his serve, going ballistic, apparently using some pretty awful language, which he totally owned up to and apologised for, got an unsportsmanlike conduct charge as a result of that, but still ended up winning. But I think, I know we've talked a lot about Tsitsipas in the past, and at the start of this tournament, I don't think I would have given him much of a prayer against Federer. Having seen that match, I believe he's going to take Federer deep.
Interesting. I mean, he did push him at the Hotman Cup. It was two very tight sets.
I just think it reminded me of what he can do today. You know, he has that dexterity in his hands.
And it's matchups, isn't it? He can do what Fritz just cannot do, which is bring his own variety, impose himself against Federer.
And not suffer the ill effects of locker room aura.
Yeah. Mm. He's got belief.
He's got total belief. He's not going to be cowed by anyone. Federer knows that. Interestingly, in the on-court interview with Roger Federer today, Federer admitted... was it John McEnroe doing the Federer on-court interview? No, that was the Nadal one.
Yeah,
lots of people were tweeting about some joke that happened there.
Oh, yeah, that was quite funny. He was asked,
Nadal did a joke and it was funny.
He was asked if he wanted to thank his physical trainer and he said...
No, I've had all those injuries.
I'm getting injured all the time.
but somebody, and apologies that I'm not giving that person credit, asked Federer about the importance of sort of maintaining his locker room aura and maintaining that sort of halo-like, you know, thing that he walks around with. And he said, yeah, I do cultivate that. I do see that as a significant thing. And it is important. And that is not going to be a thing against Stefanos Tsitsipas, who, incidentally... made a fulsome apology for that behaviour and that unsportsmanlike conduct with absolutely no caveats at all. In press afterwards, he said, I'm ashamed of my behaviour, I apologise for it. Heat of the moment. Said he was embarrassed by it and good on it. He also said, I don't have many friends on tour and I'm working on that.
Should we offer? Because I quite
like
it. I'll
be his friend.
Yeah. I'm up for it. I mean, I'm probably...
There's also something a bit sad about saying, I'll be your friend.
You'd probably say, no, you're all right, Dad.
Yeah. The guy with no friends saying, I don't even want you as a friend.
Can I have a friend without grey hair? Because you're a bit old.
I don't think he would care, though.
Nah.
He doesn't care about that stuff.
Oh, good lad, Steph. Right. So I also enjoyed Roger Federer's son, Lenny, on the lap of his...
Are we sure it was Lenny?
Yeah.
Apparently it was.
Because Federer said so. On the lap of his mum, Mirka.
Well, where was the other one?
I don't know.
Are you sure they didn't switch? It sure wasn't like the prestige.
Well, Roger Federer said it was Lenny. I hope he knows. How can he tell? He was smacking Ivan Ljubicic in the face to burst the little bits of... Ljubicic was blowing out his cheek for him to pop, which my son does with me, which I find particularly amusing. Anyway, that was happening on the big screen. Catherine's wondering what on earth I'm talking about. The two matches of the day were Maria Sharapova against Caroline Wozniacki, and the big upset of the day, which has been an absolute predictions killer, Amanda Anisimova beating Aryna Sabalenka 6-3, 6-2. Let's start with that one. She's arrived, folks.
Well, I can confirm that I'm going to pronounce it differently to you, and Matt might pronounce her name a third different way. She said she wants her name to be pronounced the American way.
Which is
Anisimova.
Anisimova.
And not Anisimova, which is the Russian way. She wants the... Because technically, Sharapova should be Sharapova. Mm. Anyway... goodness me, she's good. I know it's not... For a lot of people, they were like, who's this kid? Where's she come from? And sort of for nerdy tennis people, that they were like, oh, chill out. She was a thing in Indian Wells. You know, it's like when you're 13, everyone's like getting into Papa Roach. You're like, well, I had their first album.
Yeah.
It turns out Papa Roach were rubbish and everyone was embarrassing themselves. But anyway...
Catherine the Cool.
She is. I mean, she's better than we even thought in Indian Wells, isn't she? To pick out a single thing seems facile, really, because everything's so great. To see us again, see her standing alongside Aryna Sabalenka, who's of no age herself, that looked like woman and girl,
yes.
And yet the girl was bullying the woman around the court. To see Aryna Sabalenka being pushed around like that.
I'm quite happy to be facile. two points, I would say. One is I do feel that when Anisimova beat Petra Kvitova, who was hitting her big shots...
Who she now plays.
Mm. Right. Who was hitting her big shots, and Anisimova was treating them like they were nothing. I'd never seen that before by anybody. And it's not just that there are other big power players, but this woman's ability to pick out a ball that is flying at Mach 10 at her and just strike it purely from the centre of the strings time after time after time is, I don't think I've seen that from anybody. And she did that against Kvitova and she beat her easily. She did that against Sabalenka today, who is surely the biggest hitter in the game in terms of just raw power and aggression and ferocity and all the rest of it, and she was just sweeping these backhands cross court.
Not a bad rehearsal for playing Kvitova either, is it? Playing Sabalenka, crikey, she's not going to feel. She's playing somebody that she's played once and beaten, and is exactly the same mould of tennis player as the previous woman that she ate for breakfast. I mean, Anisimova is going into that feeling like, yeah.
But also, if you look at the three players she's played in this tournament, she's played Monica Niculescu, who is a world away from Aryna Sabalenka, slice and dice. Serenko in the second round, who's a complete counterpuncher.
She beat her for the loss of two games.
Yeah, and now she's taken apart. I went out onto the Margaret Court Arena just thinking it would be a competitive match and she'd really challenge Sabalenka. I was blown away by how good Anisimova was. Like, it was a joke what she was doing. Her backhand is from the heavens.
I think it might be the best backhand I've ever seen, men or women. And I know that's a big statement.
It's so good. She can do anything with it, and she can move. There was one point where she was scampering from side to side, and she eventually did a sort of squash shot, and it sort of hung in the air for ages and just dropped on the line.
Do you know when that happened? I was in the I was in the radio room in a room full of people with my headphones on watching this. You know, I was one of those moments where I'm not really aware of the fact that I'm surrounded by people, and I'm watching this ball float from outside of the tram lines, veering back in and landing in the postage stamp between sideline and baseline for break point, and I just went, no way! And everybody just went, what? And I'm suddenly aware that, oh, I'm surrounded here. Look at the replay, you'll justify it.
It was one of those performances where you think, how is this person ever losing tennis matches?
Yeah,
where's she been
literally.
To Indian Wells? I know she's cropped up a couple of times, but she's not been doing Indian Wells type things since Indian Wells. Like, how has she not been winning everything?
But that's the thing, is when you look at the matchups, and we talk about the next one against Petra Kvitova, when you're that age, when you're 17, it may well be that you do it for one match and then you can't do it the next round.
She's done it for three, and I think that's a very valid point Matt makes about them all being very different.
She's already talking about winning this tournament.
She is.
Well, yeah.
Well, what do we think about that?
Well, when it was said on the on-court interview, it was said, you know, can you follow in Maria Sharapova's footsteps and be a teenager to win a slam? I was thinking, oh, come on, let's give her room to breathe. There's still so many good players left in the draw. And then I thought about it again. And I thought, well, if she plays like that, she legitimately could.
She's beaten the player that I had in my final. Mm-hmm. So,
And I should say my blog today is about that match.
Okay, yeah. Go and read Grad Matt's blogs, folks. Tennispodcast.net. Every day. He's done some absolute corkers. Go and read the back catalogue. It's worth it, I'm telling you.
It is going to be interesting, though, because Kvitova was sublime today.
Yeah. Mm. And
she beat Belinda Bencic.
She's on an eight-match winning streak now.
I mean, she made absolute mincemeat. An hour and 8 minutes against Belinda Bencic. I thought that was going to be one of the matches of the day. Lovely. Contrast of styles on the Melbourne arena that... is a completely
It's not a good
it's
court,
it's not a
is
good
it?
Name no. for a court. I don't like it. I keep calling it the Hisense Arena. but then I feel like I should be being paid by Hisense to say that.
Yeah, you should.
But anyway, she was blooming good.
Maria Sharapova ended up playing Caroline Wozniacki, defending champion. And actually, tennis wasn't that good, really. I mean, it was quite an error-filled match. Close. 6-3 in the third for Sharapova. I got that prediction right, folks. On our newsletter,
I
if you'd like to sign up to it.
Pending the result of Verdasco's potential collapse.
Yes.
We might have a full house today.
Oh, good, yeah. Basically, what we're doing, folks, is every day...
After yesterday.
In our newsletter, we're doing our match prediction of the day for the next day.
Yeah,
so sign up.
Somebody somewhere thought, you know what this tennis podcast...
More bad predictions.
More reputation-destroying predictions. Brilliant.
Yeah, I tell you, I seem to be back in the game.
Yeah, David said to me today, he rocked back on his chair, he just went, I am winning the predictions competition this year. I am Novak Djokovic. I've been injured. I was like, when have you been injured? He was like, oh, just mentally, I just wasn't on it last year with the predictions, but this year I'm on it. And
burnout.
I must say,
I had burnout.
And he's doing annoyingly well.
Yeah, I tell you, I'm really flying early on.
The hair and the tortoise to you.
Yeah. The beard's gone, but I tell you, I haven't lost my strength.
It is a set tie break, people. It is set point to Marin Cilic.
Oh, come on. Let's go all the way. Let's go deep into the night.
Yeah, that's definitely what the people in the Eurosport office are thinking.
Other winners, Sloane Stephens over Petra Martic, 2 tie breaks. Apparently Sloane Stephens was in great form in the interview room. She was chatting away, having a good time. It's interesting how sometimes she's really happy to talk and other times she's just couldn't give a stuff and she doesn't say anything. Thomas Burdick, who I said will reach the semi-finals.
God, he might win the bloody tournament.
Well, he's playing Rafael Nadal
next. Him or Roberto Bautista Agut.
Yeah.
It's a horror... Correct me if I'm wrong, I haven't actually looked it up, but from memory, that's a horrible record for Burdick.
19-4, I think we saw today. And
four.
One of them at the Australian Open, but
yeah.
Nadal was not really Nadal that
crushed
year.
Nadal 4 years ago, but as you say, it wasn't Nadal at his best.
But my goodness me, Thomas Burdick, this tournament so far. Wow.
Yeah, honestly, wow.
I mean, Matt reckons that he hits the ball cleaner than anybody, except
me. I think there's something to be said for that.
I mean, is anyone disputing that?
Me?
I think he's just...
Who's hitting it cleaner?
I hit a good ball.
To be fair, I have never seen David play tennis.
When I'm on my game. No,
I
all
have,
right.
I have Matt.
Okay, it doesn't seem to be washing. So I know what you mean there.
Even if I were complimenting...
Amanda Anisimova.
Even if I were complimenting your game, David, even if I was saying you're a world beater, you're not a clean... You're a slicer and dicer.
No, that's not a clean strike. That hurts.
Hang on, the thing is about Bird.
No, I mean, you've got to know your game. You're Monica Niculescu. We've done this.
6'7" Monica Niculescu,
yeah.
Who's not very good.
A sight to behold.
The thing about Burdick, I feel like I'm rediscovering Thomas Burdick.
Yes, I feel like Thomas Burdick is rediscovering Thomas Burdick.
I've seen Thomas Burdick play what feels like 1,000 matches.
But it's absence makes the heart grow fonder, isn't it?
But I think the same for him in tennis. I feel like everybody's gone, Thomas Burdick, he's really good, but we know exactly what we're getting. He's the guy where you know exactly what you're getting. He's not going to surprise you. He can play really well.
Which,
but
to be fair, is all we've got so far.
He's got to the
Australian Open fourth round 11 out of the last 13 years.
He's beaten Federer at the Olympics and a couple of times at Grand Slams. Pretty good.
Oh, yeah, he's had a great career.
And a Wimbledon final.
He's a brilliant tennis player.
Grigor Dimitrov's made a believer out of you again, somehow.
How's that happen? I need to stop interviewing him. Yeah. Have you seen the bracelets that he's wearing?
No.
I think he's gone a bit sort of Joshua Tree on us all. But, you know, if he has, then it's working.
Right.
I interviewed him a couple of days ago after his... second round victory over Pablo Cuevas, and interviewed him today after his straight sets victory over Thomas Fabiano, and in the intervening period was sent in Mats Wilander's stead because he was caught up in commentary on Raonic and Wawrinka, sent to interview Andre Agassi. Everyone made it very clear to me that I was very much a substandard replacement for Mats Wilander. But that's all right. I know my place.
They clearly don't know what they're talking about.
The way their respective faces lit up when talking about one another, it was like Dimitrov's his surrogate son. I mean, it really is something. I know that's Agassi is. I know that's his demeanour. Not that I'm not sure I actually have interviewed him before. I know he's that sort of warm, twinkly-eyed, spiritually guy. But, yeah, I mean, the way that he talked about Dimitrov coming to stay with him and Steffi in Las Vegas, and Dimitrov talking about how Agassi's family has embraced his family and their parents get on, and it's all just one big happy meditation around the Joshua tree. I don't meditate around the Joshua tree, but it is working for Grigor Dimitrov.
Well, he's into the last 16.
It is working. And do you know what? The second question I asked him was, look, relative to previous years, you've flown a little bit under the radar here. Has that suited you? And I don't know whether his response was chippy. He went, yeah, totally, it's really suited me. And I don't think he's a sarcastic guy. But no. I don't know, what do you think? I really don't know. Do you think he's hated it?
I don't think he is a sarcastic guy, really. No. I don't think that's really him. I think he probably is quite happy to just earn his right to be talked about.
Or maybe he was saying, well, I don't feel like I've flown under the radar. I've got flipping Andre Agassi with me, and there's circus around us wherever we go. But he hasn't played on Margaret Court. He hasn't played on Rod Laver.
No,
but
he's been out.
And I think that's really been good for him, because the Bulgarian support out there has been vociferous, and he's loved it. He signed every autograph.
Oh, he's lovely.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life, and of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. So Dimitrov now plays Francis Tiafoe, who you were both discussing yesterday, and who registered another cracking win today, from 2-1 down against Andreas Seppi. And what really struck me, I only saw sets 4 and 5, which are the ones that got him the win. And what I was really impressed with is that he just suddenly decided to go for it on the forehand. He stopped messing around. It was a bit like Nadal in a way in after the first three games against Dimitrov, except Tiafoe, it seemed to take him three sets, and then suddenly, boom, he is clubbing forehand winners. And really, Seppi had no answer. It was very interesting.
Yeah, he really stepped it up, and it was so impressive that he did it when it was tight. That was kind of the moment where you think he might go into a shell, but he really stepped it up. And his forehand, which we have talked about as potentially being a weakness, really, you know, proved me wrong that actually it can be a weapon.
And that is an impressive win, because Seppi is with the greatest respect, he's sort of that Bautista Agut figure, you know, the sort of steady, eddy, persistent guy that is just going to play his part and ruin the little story that you've already written and before the match, you know.
And it's like Kyle Edmund last year had to go through Seppi, and it felt like a really big sort of.
Yeah.
It's like a sort of rite of passage. You have to be able to beat Andreas Seppi to sort of prove your worth for the second being in the second half of a slam.
I love that. Yeah.
Anderson's the same, actually. You know, again, Kyle Edmund went through Anderson, and TFO's gone through Anderson. These are both just so solid. You really have to go out there, like you said, David, and beat them. Take
Kevin
your game
Anderson,
to them.
You are a hurdle to be overcome.
Yeah.
By the youth.
Yeah, if you can beat those sort of guys, though, you have. Yeah, yeah, you've arrived a bit.
There's
really.
I really mean it with the greatest of respect. There's no shortcuts to beating those guys. There is absolutely no shortcut to beating Andrea Seppi. There are better players than him out there, but you'll have to outplay him.
Oh yeah, when Kyle Edmund drew Seppi last year at the Australian Open, it was one of those where you thought, well, I'm not sure Edmund will win this, but when he did, I was thinking, well, yeah, there you go, you've moved to another level, and he ended up in the semi-finals. So. Now Dimitrov plays TFO. I think they play
each other
at the.
They have a very similar draw. Kyle Edmund last year and TFO this year.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Anderson, Seppi, and now Dimitrov.
Mm.
It's good.
I've got this feeling about Dimitrov, though.
Yeah.
Which, on the basis of my predictions this year, should be ignored.
Well, Dimitrov, I think, beat him quite comfortably at Laver Cup. Now, how much you can read into that, I don't know.
Although they did play a very close match somewhere else.
I think
feel like that was in Cincinnati, the year that Dimitrov won Cincinnati. Anyway.
If TFO really takes it to him, he's got the physicality. He's a very, very good athlete. And he doesn't seem to wear out either.
He's got to make Dimitrov doubt himself. Mm. That's what he's got to do, I'm afraid to say it. But Dimitrov seems to be feeding off... I think the fact that Andre Agassi believes in him is making Dimitrov believe in himself.
Right. Yeah, I think that's a good point, actually.
And TFO needs to find a way to make him to shake that belief.
Bautista Agut has beaten Kevin Hachinov.
Yeah. And it looked like it was happening again. Yeah, he was two sets to love up. And then suddenly Hachinov starts coming back, and it's 2-1. And you're thinking, "Oh, Roberto," but he did it. He did it. Good on him.
Got it done in three.
And I had Hachinov in my quarterfinals.
Yeah, same.
Into a fifth set, Marin Cilic, as we speak. And now the match schedule for tomorrow. Incidentally, Ash Barty looked good today, beating Maria Sakkari. Oh dear, Barty looks good. She's in my semis. It's good, this. Right.
Halepin Venus on Margaret Court Arena.
Yeah, what is that all about there?
Can I give you my interpretation? And I'm absolutely up for a Tennis Australia spokesperson telling me I'm wrong. It seems to me that they were given the option of playing second on Rod Laver or first on Margaret Court. And given what happened last night, you want to play first, whatever. And I'm starting to come around to the view that if you're not going to put a formal limit on what time matches can start, and there doesn't seem to be much appetite for that. I mean, I think there ought to be, but there doesn't seem to be. If that's going to be the case, you simply have to put women's matches on first.
Well, I was going to say, my answer to that is that should be the first match in the match session.
Yeah.
It is the
on
match of the
Arena.
Day.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That is the match that should
but
be number one priority.
But if you're looking at the two slots allocated for women's matches tomorrow, second on Rod Laver, first on Margaret Court. First on Margaret Court is the better billing for the players.
For the players.
For the players.
Yeah.
So, but it shouldn't be that conundrum
in
the first place.
Well, put it this way, I can tell you that on BBC Radio tomorrow, we'll be doing Simona Halep against Venus Williams.
Quite right, too.
I tell you what, I'm going to go and see if I can find out. I'm going to go and ask the question tomorrow and find out why that decision has been made and whether the players requested it or what, because I am mindful of, I don't want to be critical without knowing the details, but I it doesn't feel right to me. So we'll see.
See
if I can find out. So it starts tomorrow with Elina Svitolina against Zhang Shuai. We've then got Serena Williams against, is it Diana Yastremska?
Daria Yastremska.
Daria, okay. Then
you won't, I don't think you'll have to know how to pronounce her name after tomorrow.
Not too much. Djokovic, she's a good player.
Great player.
Just not that good. Yeah. Djokovic against Shapovalov. That's because Serena Williams is the greatest of all time.
Can I talk about dogs?
Can we just have Djokovic against Shapovalov predictions?
Yeah. Anybody? Well, that's this is where the dogs
prediction.
Come in.
Oh, yeah. Dogs, go.
I spoke to Shapovalov with dog
yes.
earlier.
What a really? Great what a great
with guide dog puppy.
I met a baby kangaroo.
It's a low blow, David.
Catherine's... was not there and she's not happy about it and I better move
but then the universe sent me puppies.
A dark yes. cloud has come over this
honestly
podcast.
I literally stumbled so we'd arranged to meet Rob Steckley, Denis Shapovalov's coach, to do an interview with him to preview Shapovalov against Djokovic, and he said, oh, Denis is doing a thing by court five and I'm there, so can you come out and do it here? And we said, yeah, fine. And arrived and stumbled upon this scene. I honestly questioned whether I was in some sort of trance-like euphoric state. Stumbled across a scene of two guide dog puppies fumbling across the legs of Denis Shapovalov. And then somebody from Tennis Australia says, would you like an interview with Denis Shapovalov and the puppies? And I said... yes, okay. Great, let's do that now. And suddenly I'm doing sort of the worst interview of my life because I'm so thoroughly distracted and as my producer calls it, being weird about the puppies present. But I don't care because it was the best part of my day. And Rob Steckley's an interesting guy. That's an interesting vibe that they've got going together. There's no doubt that Shapovalov feels confident. There's no doubt that their MO together is keeping Denis loose.
Interesting. That's very interesting.
Look, we'll see if that
works.
Tell
you what, loose Shapovalov is dangerous in a match like this. He's got nothing to lose.
Do you think it's... whose detriment is it that that's not a night session match?
I don't think it makes too much difference. It's third on... It's fine. I don't think it matters either way. I think, yes, Shapovalov would love the night session vibe. Of course he would. But I think he'll be fine with that. I think he'll play well. Whether it's enough, I don't know.
Yeah, I just think...
Djokovic will win.
I just think Djokovic is just going to turn it on and
I think so
get
too.
It done.
I think Shapovalov's winning the set.
Yeah, possibly a set. Yeah,
we'll let him have that.
We'll see. It's Zverev against Bolt in the evening
puppies,
session.
You'll always have the puppies.
And then it's Georgie against Pliskova,
Dinkley.
Which is
Dinkley and Troy.
All right. Can we get on to the order of play? And then we got this Halep Venus Williams match in the evening session on Margaret Court Arena. We got Naomi Osaka playing tomorrow. Kei Nishikori back to back in the afternoon.
That's cool.
That is cool, isn't it? That really is cool.
Luca Pui. Coached by Amélie Mauresmo, up against Alexei Popyrin.
Lexi.
Is it?
Popyrin.
Okay. The cool wild card from Australia.
He is... It's like you've sort of created a human being and then stretched them.
Yes.
He is a beanpole of a...
Tall young lad.
He's the proverbial beanpole.
Yes, he is.
Alex Bolt. He's got some hair.
Yeah, he's got some hair. It's blonde bits on it. Isn't
there? Yeah.
Okay, so that's about it for the tennis podcast. Listen, folks, we've had lots of people come up to us over the fortnight and say hello, which has been really nice, and people have said some lovely things about the podcast. Our message to you is if you're enjoying it, just go and tell somebody you know, whether it's a friend or a family member or somebody in the street who you think likes tennis, and you just tell them about the tennis podcast. If you see them at the tennis, if you're at the Australian Open, you get chatting with your neighbour when you're watching a match, tell them about the tennis podcast and make them into a listener, because we want as many of you as we can possibly get. We have been executive produced by tennisballs.com. Our mascot is Rio with a Y, a lovely dog. Go and check out the Instagram page of Rio with a Y. Catherine, have a good sleep. See you tomorrow. Bye bye.
More puppies tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Matt Grandma.
See you.
It's been a joy, and we will be back with you tomorrow. See you then.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.